You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Usually on Fridays I have a long edition. I did that yesterday evening, Thursday, and it's a long show that I have to edit down. I'm a little behind on my post-production work, but I should catch up by 5 o'clock Saturday. I hope to have one program done this evening and this and the long Thursday show done by 5 o'clock Saturday. So I'll be all caught up. At least that's my goal. And I think I should be able to achieve it, but it's going to be a push. So this will not be a two-hour show. This will probably be at most an hour show, maybe a little longer. And when I edit it down, it'll be probably under an hour. I've been wrestling with how do you get information about the threats that the American people face, as well as Europeans, out when you have a media largely supporting the current administration. In other words, the media today, the television networks, your radio news, is largely controlled by both at the top and the people that they hire. Now, there are exceptions. I understand this. I don't want to paint with a too broad a brush. But most of your media, both television, the newscast on radio, note I didn't say the talk radio shows, as well as your print media, although they are somewhat dying, such as the Washington Post, New York Times, Los Angeles Times. And I mean by dying is the readership is going down, down, and down. So how do you get your message out? Well, the obvious way is what I'm doing right now, doing podcasts, but also doing posts to the World Wide Web. Have a blog. And then if you have the time and the inclination and the ability, write books, magazine articles. And again, it's going to be difficult because you're faced with censorship. Now, it's not the obvious censorship of you can't write it. It's just especially because magazines have their bias. And many of the magazines, just like the newspapers and the television, the editors now are of the left. They're progressives, they're liberals. And many of them won't even admit that, but they are. And I talked to people that worked in the news. It was an interesting comment. I was pressing someone that's obviously a Democrat, a liberal. Nice guy. I said, but tell me, aren't you a progressive or liberal? That's what I've asked this question several times to people, and they deny it. Even obvious ones, they don't want to answer that question because they figure you're labeling me. What they really don't want to do is self-identify what they are. They're hiding it. Now, some are clearly out of the closet, such as Hillary Clinton. She likes to be called a progressive. I believe Barack Obama does. Now, they typically do not want to be called socialist or social Democrats. The only ones that will admit that are really in the far left. But what's happened is we have two parties that now are big government parties. One is pushing. It's gone left, left, and left, and now it's really almost there. It is the extreme left, and that's the Democratic Party. But the Republican Party is also a left-to-center party in terms of its leadership. And because of that, they don't like conservatives. They don't like libertarians, although many will try to again, hide what they are by talking like they are one. So again, you have a problem. How do you get your message out? Well, get a talk radio show. If that's not your skill set, you don't have communication skills, write. If you can't write, then join organizations that are trying to protect your freedom. There's many. I'm not even going to suggest any. You need to do your own homework and research into it, and you got to be very, very careful. But the problem you face, especially if you're a college student, I'm on a community college campus, Richland College at the moment, the predominant political philosophy is progressivism. Probably 90-95% of the faculty support staff. That's what they are. And you got to realize that. Now, some of them are fair, but there are others that are not. What's going on? Let me give you a small example, and I might get in trouble with this, so I'm going to somewhat disguise it. In order for me to have access to the studio, I obviously have to be a student, but you need to take at least one course. Now, they don't tell you what course to take, and I've taken advantage of that because I want it broadcast. Now, I could do this from home, but I much prefer doing it in a studio. And it makes me prepare what I do, usually anywhere from 2 hours to 5 hours, depending on how long the show is going to be. I do a lot of preparation. Anyone that's good in talk radio does that. They don't just walk in the door, sit down, and start talking. You can't do that. And I've really been a little remiss and not doing enough preparation. There's tons of things I need to read that I unfortunately skim, and that's simply not a good approach. Now, many talk show hosts that are on commercial radio can get away with that, and some actually mail it in. There are a few people that come in and just talk, but I don't think they're the stars. They're certainly not in the top 20 or 30, but there are many local stations, and I've listened to them, and some are good. There's some talented people in every major city across the United States. But I get a sense, even amongst those that are very successful, that a few of them are not doing their homework. And I'm guilty of that. And the reason you need to do your homework is you need to get your message out. And if you don't have the content, you have a problem. Now, one thing this forces me to do the homework is very simple. There are no call-ins. A lot of talk radio stations locally, And no criticism of these people, but they rely on talk-ins, call-ins. I call them talk-ins, call-ins. And that can be deadly. The very best in this industry minimize that. Some would rather not have call-ins, and many of them don't have anybody calling in. And I've gotten used to that. I do, though, like call-ins because, and that's why I listen to a lot of talk radio. I'd like to see what people are asking. And you get, I don't care how well the call is screened, you're always going to get flakes. And you have to quickly move on, and that's a skill set. And what that means is they hang up on the caller. And in the last couple of days, and I'm fairly quick, I can spot somebody that, you need to terminate the call. That's the best thing to say. And the problem is, initially, they come over very, let's say, rational, reasonable. They can express themselves, and then they quickly go off the deep end. And that's when, if you're smart, you'll end it, because it's not going to get any better. So I don't have to worry about that, but I do have a concern. And the reason I'm concerned about this, if you listen to the media, the so-called mainstream media, what are they covering over and over again? And who are they attacking this week? It's Donald Trump. They are trying to take him out, and they're not succeeding. One of the reasons is, and I have the same attitude, Donald Trump doesn't care about these people. They didn't make him successful, not at all. He doesn't consider them an elite, neither do I, because most of them are leftists. They don't admit it, but they are. Now, not all of them. And there are people of the left that can be fair, but they're few and far between. And you usually will spot it real easy when they want to talk over the person they're interviewing. And that's a common fault. And then if you want to spot a leftist, there are different ways I use to spot them, sometimes on issues. But if they're interviewing you, they'll talk over you. They'll continually interrupt because they don't want you to get your opinion out. They don't want to hear your ideas. They want to make you look like an idiot. So they're continually interrupting. See, occasionally I do interviews. I'd like to do a lot more, but I don't have time for a producer. If I had someone to interview, I prepare. You better believe I prepare. And I ask a question, and then I shut up. I let them respond. Because I've noticed, both on television and radio, the best interviewers ask the question, and then since you have an expert or someone of a different opinion, let them express their opinion. That doesn't mean you let them talk on and on and on, because there's some that will do exactly that. President Obama is a perfect example of that. You'll ask him a question, and 10 minutes later, he's still answering the question. So at some point, you got to interject and ask follow-up questions. But I will generally let the person go on for a couple of minutes, at least one, two, or three, and then jump in with a follow-up question. Now, you need to discipline yourself to do that, and there's a fine balancing act, and that only comes from experience. I hope to have a nationally syndicated radio show sometime in the next year or two at the very latest. And I will be interviewing people. And I will need to get more and more experience in that area. But the worst thing I could do is try to express my views. And it's very tempting, because supposedly the presenter, the host of the show, is the star. You're supposed to make the host shine, if you will. No problem with that. But I don't think anyone really shines when you're constantly interrupting. And I have a problem in that regard, because I will let someone talk, but if they're not clear or they're not telling the truth, I will call them on it. So Donald Trump, I saw a very good interview. Not the best of interviews, but a very good interview of Donald Trump on he was on CNN. I forget the gentleman's first name. I think it's Don Lemon. And I thought he did a very good job, but he had for two reasons. Donald Trump would say, excuse me, or I forget the phrase he was using. He was trying to say, please let me finish my thought. And I thought that was wise of Trump, and it was wise of the interviewer to be quiet for a minute or two and then ask the question. Now, I'm going into this for a reason. What's the threat we face today in the United States? And there are two big threats. The obvious one is from radical Islam. And the problem is, most Americans, I would say the overwhelming majority of Americans, know very little about Islam in general and radical Islam in particular. Now, some are getting a lot smarter, but you need to, because they're dangerous. It is a violent, dangerous religion. And it's a growing religion in terms of number of people. Does that mean all the people that are Muslims are radical? No. But the religion itself, the ideology, religion, however you want to describe it, is profoundly violent. And it's profoundly, deeply totalitarian. And they want to limit your speech, especially if you're a non-believer, even if you're a believer. And you need to understand that. So you need to become more and more knowledgeable of the threats facing this nation. And you'll get a debate amongst both military, foreign affairs experts, what's the greatest threats? Some will say Russia, some will say China. I think the greatest threat is radical Islam. And the problem is the sheer numbers. And I went over that in the show yesterday. But I'll briefly summarize. Today, roughly, there are over 1,600 million Muslims. They're not all in the Middle East. The largest Muslim nation is Indonesia. But they're all over the world. It is expected by the year 2050 that the total number of people of the Islamic faith will be approximately 2,800 million. That's quite a lot of people. And by then, the population of the world will be somewhere between 8 billion and 9 billion. So in a ballpark figure, Muslims will probably be about 30% of the total population of the world. And the reason for this is very simple. It's the number of births. The United States today is just under the replacement birth rate that you need of 2.1. For many, many years, we were at 2.1%, but we're now slightly below it. In Europe, and this is the big problem of Europe and Russia and also China, the replacement rate is below 2.1. And what happens is, over a period of decades, several decades, it doesn't take long, if you do not reproduce, in other words, have a family of at least two or a little two or three children per family, your population will go down. And over a 40, 50-year period, it'll dramatically go down. So one of the things you can do if you want to deal with the threat of radical Islam is to get married and have kids, three kids at least. I don't have children, so I have a problem there. I need to find a good woman, marry, and have at least three kids. I have no plans in that regard, but I have not given up. I have an open mind. I say that jokingly, but that is the problem that Europe faces and the United States faces. So if you want to deal with the threat of radical Islam, one is have more children. Ideally, three, four, five. As many as you can afford. So be successful like Donald Trump and have as many children as you want, the same as Bill Gates. That would be the responsible, reasonable, reason approach when you're dealing with a violent religion that is trying to overthrow the Constitution of the United States and the government of the United States. Their objective is very clear, to replace the United States Constitution and its laws with Sharia law, which is what that means, is replace our current representative republic with the theocracy, where there's only one religion, and that religion is Islam. Now, they know that that doesn't make much sense today in the United States, but that is their goal, and you need to understand that first. They want to spread radical Islam across the entire world, where there only be one religion, and they consider their religion the last religion. The only truer religion, the last religion, is Islam. That's what they believe, and they want to spread it. And they want to overthrow governments worldwide until they have a worldwide caliphate. And they're succeeding, or will succeed, unless people of Western Europe, Japan. Now, Japan, before I forget, Japan doesn't let, it lets very, very few people of the Muslim faith in. They know the threat, and they're not letting them in. And that needs to be the approach. Now, I don't say such a severe approach as Japan has is the answer. But it works, because they perceive it as a threat, and they don't want any part of it. So that's going to be a tough nut for the radical Islamists to attack. Doesn't mean they're not going to try to do that, because they'll try to convert Japanese again over the internet, and that's how they're doing it in the United States as well. They're using the tools, the propaganda tools, the communication tools of the World Wide Web, the internet, with websites, and it's effective. Now, you hear the term, and it is driving me nuts, because it's so obvious you would think that this would spur some investigative journalism into the topic. These two shooters, these jihadists, Islamic jihadists that killed 14 people in San Bernardino, the way the news media handles it is they were radicalized. If I've heard that once, I've heard it at least 100 times this week. They were radicalized. The obvious question is by what, but it also has an obvious answer. They were radicalized by radical Islam. See, the religion of Islam is radical. If you don't believe me, read the Quran or listen to people that have. Robert Spencer is a good place to start. And I think I have at least one or two of his videos. And before I forget, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to my companion blog for the show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you do, at the very top, you'll see my photograph of yours truly in the studio, and right below it, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And you'll notice that this show and the last two shows, I have not done the post-production, so it says to be posted by Friday or Saturday. And I'll get that done, because I point that out because I get a lot of hits from people that go to the companion blog, and then I know some of them are disappointed that I don't have the show up. I'm sorry about that, but I've been very, very busy. But I will have it definitely all caught up by Saturday at 5. And you'll see, you don't see it, I'm not seeing it here, but I've seen it on other sites or other monitors. I give you my notes. If you don't see my notes for the show, and that includes photographs, cartoons, statistical information, articles, YouTube videos, a whole host of different material that I look at in preparing the show. And I give you that information because I want you to do your homework, have an open mind, do your homework, and listen to a number of, for example, this, I have a number of images and cartoons. But what's more important, and that's really to get your interest, and also to be a little bit provocative. But I have a number of YouTube videos and documentaries about radical Islam, and I suggest you listen to them. One is Obsession, which is a famous documentary on it, and they've been done at different periods of time, some a couple of years after 9/11. And these have somewhat of a point of view, but they're on radical Islam. Now, why do these people do documentaries on it? Because they know that most Americans, and I will say most Europeans, know very little about the Islamic faith at all. And that's dangerous. That will kill you. That will destroy your nation, will destroy your country, because they're attacking us different ways. And they're infiltrating this country just like the communists did in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and during the Cold War. They are. Now, what's going on that makes this a very, very dangerous situation is radical Islam is forming alliances, and some very unlikely alliances unless you understand the ideologies. At its core, radical Islam is totalitarian. They tell you in glorious detail how you live your life. And many follow that religion, but they do not become radical jihadists or terrorists, and that's good. But unfortunately, and there are varying estimates of this, on the low side, anywhere from 5% to 15% are radical Muslims. They believe in radical Islam, and they are fundamentalist. And that makes them very, very dangerous. It makes it very dangerous for you, for example, to travel in the Middle East, especially in Syria and Iraq, Libya, Egypt, and other countries. You run the risk of being kidnapped and then tortured and killed. The problem is, what's 5% or 15%? Let's take a middle number to keep the math simple. Let's say it's 10%. These are all estimates. What's 10% of 1,600 billion plus? That's 160 million people, folks. That is a lot of jihadis. That is a lot of terrorists. That's what makes them dangerous. And they're very, very patient. One approach is the military approach, and that's what you're seeing in the Middle East. The other approach is a peaceful approach. In other words, immigrate, either legally or illegally, into other countries. If you can, come here as a refugee, or try to marry someone, and you have a choice of countries, whether it's Canada, the United States, Great Britain, France, Sweden, Germany. And some countries, at least up to now, are encouraging that. But what is happening across Europe and what's happening in the United States today? There's a backlash. Because the people are waking up that their leaders, many of them who are on the far left, are encouraging open borders, massive both legal and illegal immigration, including those from the Middle East of Muslims. And the problem is, whatever that percentage is, out of every 100, for example, we have heard expressed, initially the Obama administration said, well, we're going to have 10,000 refugees. Then the number was 20,000. Then we're hearing sounds of 100,000. I even heard 200,000. Now, that was before the terrorist attack, both in Paris and in the United States. And what you have today is states trying to stop that, including Texas. The problem is immigration is very much a national or federal issue. So there's not much leverage on the states from excluding these refugees. And they don't necessarily have to be refugees. They can be illegal aliens, people that just break into the country, whether they overstay their visa, and that could be a student visa, a tourist visa, a business visa. There are a whole slew of different types of visas. And invariably, those visas say at some point, you got to go home. And what happens is people overstay their visas. That's why we have somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens here. A big chunk of that is people overstaying their visa. The other portion is people crossing the U.S.-Mexican border. Now, in the past, that's largely been Mexicans as well as people from Central America, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and other countries, as well as South America and the Caribbean. And we have a president that's encouraging this. He doesn't care that the borders are open, that we're not protecting the American people. He's inviting them. He's encouraging them because he sees every one of these illegal aliens as a future registered Democratic voter. Now, the problem is that our political elites in this country have not really been very concerned, and they should be, of the opinion of the American people. They have run roughshod over them. Like elitists everywhere, they're arrogant. They believe they know what's best for you and me. The problem is the American people, for many, many years, this is not new. It's certainly not new to Donald Trump, do not want illegal aliens here. They want immigration law enforced. And that's why Donald Trump, who made immigration the central issue of his campaign, is leading. And I firmly believe he's going to get the nomination and he's going to win. Now, it was interesting. I was coming into the studio, and I just caught a bit of a conversation between a student and two students were talking. And this young man was saying, well, maybe Donald Trump would get the nomination, but he'll never get elected. Now, I didn't have time to stop or engage him. I just kept on walking. But that's what I heard. Don't believe it. That's what the media wants you to think. And that student is, I think, going to be disappointed. Now, it's way too early. We haven't had a primary yet. It's not far away, folks. The first one is 1 February, then the 7th of February, and a lot of them are in March, especially 1 March in Texas. So I said by last show, by 1 April, we'll have a fairly good idea who is going to be the next nominee of the Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party. I have no doubts that the Democratic Party nominee will be Hillary Clinton. The only thing that would stop her, and I don't think it is going to stop her, it should stop her, but it won't, is if the Obama administration's Department of Justice indicts her. I think what I know about the activity she's been engaged in, and what I'm talking about is the handling of classified information, she should be indicted. Multiple counts, and most likely would be convicted. If she were anybody else, she would have been indicted by now. That's my point. She's not going to be. Why? She's politically protected. Now, some of you will say, and I've said, there's no love between the Obamas and the Clintons. I agree. They're very much rivals. And even today, Hillary Clinton thought she was robbed, that she should have been nominated and elected in 2008 and 2012. And then maybe if Obama was still around, he could run. But that didn't happen. And she resents it deeply. Don't think otherwise. So I believe that the Clintons, both husband and wife, don't like President Obama. I know Bill Clinton thinks he's a lightweight. I agree. I don't respect either couple, but I do have a respect for the political skills of Bill Clinton, as I do the political skills of Donald Trump. He can spot a lightweight a mile away. So can I. I'm a very good reader of people. And that takes a lot of experience, or some would say a judge of people, because you can waste a lot of time and money on people that are simply incompetent. And we have an incompetent president, if you judge him by your standards. In terms of being a radical leftist, no, he's not incompetent. He's dividing this country, and I think he's ruining the economy, and he's a direct threat to the United States of America. Remember, he's commander-in-chief for another 13 months. In a couple of days. And I do believe in civilian control of the military. And I don't think we've seen the last of Barack Obama. Now, but the question is, why wouldn't Barack Obama, if they have the evidence, and I believe the FBI does, it just can't talk about it, won't talk about it. They're professionals. Remember, the FBI gathers the evidence, does the investigation, Federal Bureau of Investigations, but it is the Justice Department, the attorneys in the Justice Department, that make the determination whether to prosecute that person. Normally, if you have a lot of evidence, and I believe they have a lot of evidence, and they're getting more every day, and you can get a conviction, attorneys don't like to lose, then normally the person is indicted. In this case, it's not happening. Why? Well, think about it. I think both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, they have dirt on each another. And they have scandals that both were part of. Benghazi is a big one. And I was listening to the news just before I came into the studio, and there was a panel show. I think it's the 5 at 5 show. And they were mentioning the fact that in mid-January, a movie's coming out going over Benghazi. I think that will hurt Hillary Clinton. I've not seen the movie, but it'll bring back what happened in glorious Technicolor, and a lot of people are going to go to that movie. If it's a very well-made and good movie, Hillary Clinton is not going to like it. I bring this up because both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have intimate details as to what happened that day when the consulate was attacked by who? Muslims, radical Muslims, Anwar al-Sharia, an affiliate of al-Qaeda, and four Americans were killed, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. And the American people were lied to, deliberately lied to by the President of the United States, the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the United States United Nations Ambassador Susan Rice, and his press secretary. And the lie was repeated for weeks. Why? We were in the middle of an election. And the last thing Barack Obama wanted was a thorough, complete examination of his foreign policy. Because it's a disaster, and they just had a convention. And remember the theme, Bin Laden is dead, and we have al-Qaeda on the run, or the ropes. Yes, Bin Laden is dead, but he's been replaced by what I would say is a lot more threatening group, namely the Islamic State. And remember, the Islamic State originally was al-Qaeda in Iraq. They've changed their name several times. The most recent change was, I believe, the 29th of June in 2014, when they said their new name is the Islamic State and announced that they have reestablished the caliphate, and Baghdadi, Abu Baghdadi, was their caliph. And that is... And what that means is they want to spread that caliphate worldwide, and they want Sharia to be law of the land. And these people are men, predominantly, that are using religion to both get power, keep power, and attract recruits. And they're directly attacking, first, the people in the immediate vicinity, and they control a lot of territory, a lot of resources, a lot of money, and a lot of military equipment. As a result, they are a force in Syria and Iraq that supposedly is contained, depending on who you listen to in the administration. President says they're contained. I don't think they're contained. Most of the territory is desert. And yes, the Islamic State would capture cities, and then the Shias would recapture them back. You're going to get a back-and-forth flow. But they haven't been destroyed. They haven't been annihilated. And they're growing. And I need to clarify something. I wasn't sure, and I was right, but the Islamic State have gotten at least 30,000 recruits from outside the country. In other words, from all over the world that are flocking to Syria to join the jihad. Jihad is a holy war, struggle. Jihad means struggle, and there are different meanings of jihad. And many of these citizens of other countries, many of them have died already, but others are being sent back to their country of origin, whether it's in Europe, Great Britain, Australia, or the United States, after they've been trained and have experience. And they're, to the extent that they get into the United States, they're going to plan, organize, and execute terrorist attacks. Many of them will be wearing suicide vests, blowing themselves up. So they are a very much current threat, direct threat, to those that do not believe in radical Islam. Now, if you unfortunately live where they're in control or nearby, you face that threat every day. And I always point out the leading victims in what is a religious sectarian war are Muslims. Some are Sunni, some are Shia, but the Sunnis and the Shia hate each other, so they kill each other. An added element is the Islamic State, the people in it, involved in it, the jihadis, are Sunnis. They're Salafis, and they're fundamentalist. And they are waiting for the end times, or the end days, however you like to describe it. They want and are trying to provoke, and they're being successful at it, a showdown between the Crusaders, which are Christians and Jews, and their jihadis, holy warriors. They want a battle. They want a war. They're trying to encourage the United States, as well as the nations in Western Europe, to battle. And I think we should, to a certain extent, take them up on it. But who should really defeat the Islamic State? It'd be very easy for any president, not Barack Obama, he's not going to do that, but Donald Trump could, or someone else could, send in several divisions of the United States Army, Marines, to destroy, annihilate the Islamic State. That would be a big mistake. I think the strategy should be to totally wipe out the Islamic State. But who should do it is Sunnis, Arab Sunnis, not a Persian or Iraqi Shia, but Arab Sunnis from Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, just to name a few. There should be armies of those countries, divisions, if you will, should attack the Islamic State in both Syria and Iraq and destroy it. And once they've destroyed it, what should they do? They should, and this is going to take years, folks, not destroying the Islamic State, but after you destroyed him, what's the next step? You don't do what Barack Obama did, cut and run. That was his big mistake. And then he had many military advisors, diplomats saying, don't do this. Keep a token force. It's not so much a token force, but 35,000 to 50,000 troops there to keep the Shia and Sunni apart. Now, large portions of areas are predominantly or entirely Sunni, and others are entirely Shia, but you have places like Baghdad where you have both. And remember that the majority, in terms of numbers, at least two-thirds, are Shia in Iraq. See, Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, but he was a secularist. The Ba'ath Party was a socialist party. So he didn't treat the Shia very well. He killed and tortured a lot of them. The same thing with the Kurds. He tortured and killed a lot of them. So he tend to favor the Sunnis. He killed a lot of them, too. But he maintained law and order and security. Now, I'm glad Saddam Hussein was hung. Don't get me wrong here. But George Bush the First, Papa Bush, should have done that. That was the big mistake he made. There's a lot of mistakes in the Middle East. I think the biggest mistake is ever getting involved in it. We no longer need their oil. We no longer need their natural gas. And I think the American people are tired of sending their sons and daughters and spending a lot of money trying to keep the peace between the various religious sects in the area. I know the national interest is oil and gas, and we have a large international oil companies, Exxon being one, but there's a whole bunch of others, that have an interest in both Iraq and neighboring countries. The key is the Sunnis, the Arab Sunnis, need their own army in Iraq and Syria. And you don't have an army. It takes years to develop, train, equip, and get some experience. That's why I say it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take years, probably decades. But that needs to be done. Why? The Sunnis that control and are living in largely northern, western Iraq, going into eastern Syria and northern Syria, they're all Sunnis there, so they need their own army to protect themselves against, too, largely Iraqi Shias and Iranian Shias. And ultimately what I see is Iraq will be divided up into three countries, one being Arab Sunnis, another being Kurdish Sunnis, and southern Iraq being Shia, Arab Shia, though, and Baghdad being somewhat of an international city. The problem you have is how do you divide up the oil, because a lot of the oil is in Basra in southern Iraq, which is predominantly, if not entirely, Shia. You also have oil in the Mosul, Kirkuk area, near where the Kurds are, real close to it. And the powers that be there know that. Notice they really have not destroyed the Islamic State. They could have totally wrecked the oil production refineries that were there, blowing them up. They didn't do that, but that's another story. What I'm trying to say is the last thing the United States should be doing is going back and refight the Iraqi-Syrian war again. Absolutely not. But we need a commander-in-chief, a president, that will lead this, or at least encourage those nations to do it. They're not doing it. Why are they not doing it? They don't trust them. They don't trust Barack Obama. I don't trust him. I understand why they don't do it. You're seeing no movement by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, or Egypt to take them on. Oh, there's a little bit of activity, but it's token. Most of the effort to destroy the Islamic State, there's been some. It's not like it's been a raging war, folks. Even though they keep saying there's 66 nations in the coalition. No, there are about 20 that are really participation, and most of that is minimal. So it's largely been United States fighter aircraft that have, to a limited extent, destroyed parts of the Islamic State. And now you have the Russians, but the Russians are there to protect Assad, which is backed by the Iranians, who are Shia, as well as Hezbollah, that Iran backs. Remember, they're the Islamic Republic of Iran. Yes, they're radical Muslims, but they're a different sect. And the Sunnis and the Shia hate each other. I know I'm repeating myself if you're a regular listener, but most Americans don't even know that, and I have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it till it becomes second nature, or you're never going to understand this. You have ethnic divisions between Arabs, Kurds, and Persians, or the Iranians, and you have religious differences largely between Sunni and Shia. That's the major divide. But within, for example, Sunni, you have various sects, and they're not all radical Muslims. Many are, but many are not. It's complicated. But the driving central force besides religion is the natural resources, Iraq, Iran, as well as the Persian Gulf states, Qatar, United Emirates. There's oil and gas there. You see, ladies and gentlemen, that's the only reason the United States, Europe, Great Britain has been interested in the Middle East. That's the principal reason. Let's say, I won't say the only reason, but it's the principal reason. Always follow the money and ask the question, who benefits? And it's clear that the people of Iraq want to control that oil. The problem is they're not united. You have different ethnic groups and different religious groups, and the prize is the oil, or control of the oil and natural gas, as well as pipelines to get the natural gas primarily to Europe. And to do that, you need a stable economic situation. The last thing you want is an unstable situation, which we've had in Iraq for dozens of years. You don't want a religious sectarian civil war going on, because the pipelines present a terrific target. Now, the thrust of this show, and I've somewhat repeated yesterday's show, and I didn't want to do that, but I did. I'm always tempted to repeat, for the simple reason I know a lot of people don't listen to the show regularly. They're a lot of first-time listeners, so I can't assume you know it. The problem is, what's going on? What's the unholy alliance that we have in the United States today? That's not being talked about, deliberately not talked about, because the press is largely liberal, progressive, leftist, and they are protecting both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They have an agenda, and their agenda is to keep Barack Obama in power, make him look good, but make sure, no matter what, to get Hillary Clinton elected. And that's what you're going to hear on the news or the propaganda programs of the major networks. They will do their best to make sure Hillary Clinton is the savior of the United States. Well, she isn't. She's lying. She should be indicted, she should be convicted, and she should be put in prison. And it's not going to happen unless a Republican is elected and an attorney general goes after her, and they should. She's not above the law. No U.S. citizen, including her, is above the law. And where crimes have been committed, especially repeatedly, that citizen should be indicted. And I hope she is. And she knows she's guilty as hell. And because of that, she's highly motivated to win the presidency. Now, the whole, where's the unholy alliance? The best way to think of it is, what does radical Islam have in common with the radical left in the United States? They both ultimately want to impose a totalitarian regime. They do not like freedom of the press. They don't like criticism. They want only one point of view being expressed. They also do not want citizens such as you and me to have guns. You see, wherever you have a dictatorship or an overthrow of a government, there are two things that almost invariably happen rather early. First, they take over the television networks, the radios, and the newspapers, or they close them. So what you end up having is, whether it's radio or television or news, largely consist of propaganda propagating the government's opinion, positions, and that's it. They don't want freedom of speech. They certainly do not want the First Amendment that protects the mass media today. The second thing they do, besides taking over the media for a general term, is they confiscate the weapons, the guns, the rifles, the pistols of the people of the nation. Why? They don't want armed people. They don't want dissidents, but they definitely don't want armed dissidents that would oppose them and resist their regime change. That is a common pattern you'll see repeated and repeated, both on the far left and the far right. I don't like the left-right spectrum for the simple reason, for example, many on the left would refer to Adolf Hitler, and they do, as a Nazi or fascist. What he fundamentally was is a statist, a socialist. And that is the philosophy of communism as well. They're socialists. They have different names. They prefer to be called Marxist-Leninist. In the United States, we called them communists, whether they were in the Soviet Union or in China. And that's how I think of them. They want big government. They want to abolish, for example, private property, as well as your rights of free speech and a free association and assembly. They want to control you, and they want you to obey. That's what totalitarians have been about throughout history. And that's what the radical Islam is about, and that is what the radical left in this country is about. The problem they have in the United States is we do, although it's diminishing, have a representative republic with a constitution that protects the American citizens. We have the right of free speech, as well as religion, as well as the right to keep and bear arms. Those are two amendments that the totalitarians would do away with. Remember, what do the radical Muslims want? They want to replace the United States Constitution and our laws with Sharia law, which is a religious law that obviously they control. So you wouldn't have the United States Constitution and the rights of the Constitution, nor would you have the protections of the law of the Constitution. And everyone would be Muslim. That's what the radical Muslims want. Now the radical left, they will and have and continue to have alliances with radical Muslims. They think alike. Their big difference is over religion, obviously. But the aims and the methods are almost identical. But instead of religion, they do have a religion. It's their ideology of socialism or communism. They want to do away with private property. They want to do away with free enterprise. They want to do away with capitalism, as does the radical Muslims. That is the threat that we're facing. It's not You would think that the biggest threat in terms of numbers are outside of this country, the Islamic State and the Islamic Republic of Iran. And yes, they're probably, not probably, as far as I'm concerned, radical Islam is the number one threat to Western civilization and to the United States of America, and they want to overthrow it. And for that reason alone, they should be excluded from entering this country. They are, by law, the definitions, look it up, inadmissible aliens. The problem is they won't admit that. They will lie to you. And that's the problem you face. You can have a 20-page of questions to ask. They're under no, they will lie to answer the question. Are you a Muslim? No, I'm not. How do you disprove that? I don't know. I jokingly said to the newsroom, well, maybe we should have the ham sandwich test. Give them a ham sandwich and say, please eat the ham sandwich. Now, someone would eat it. Don't get me wrong. You see, the problem is you can't get into someone's head as to what he believes and whether he's a jihadist. You have the same problem with leftists in this country. You see, with the greatest threat, they're already here, folks. They are in the government. They're in the various departments. They're in the White House. Both the leftist, the radical left, and radical Muslims. That is the greatest threat to the United States today. And the problem is the media in this country is not going to expose that. It simply won't. If anything, they'll say, this is McCarthyism. The problem with McCarthy was he was right, but he was a drunk and a bully. He was the wrong person to expose the communism that we had in the government. And we did. And now that is being repeated today in the United States. The various agencies and departments of the federal government throughout are littered with radical Muslims and radical leftists. And they want to bring down the government of the United States of America. That's the danger we face. And part of it you see every day in open borders. That threatens the jobs of the American people. It is a direct and real threat. And now compounding that to encourage tens, if not hundreds of thousands of refugees from Syria and Iraq to come to the United States, even if it's only 1%, you're inviting the jihadis in. You see, we face a very much an unholy alliance between the radical left in this country as well as radical Muslims. They do not mean us well. They want to destroy our economic system. And I'll be the first to say, I'm not happy that we have a warfare and welfare state. But you have to understand who's trying to destroy this nation and how they're going to go about it and identify them. And if they're in public office, run against them and defeat them. Now, I have in the past talked about Saul Alinsky, and I've included some information on him. Actually, I found some rather good additional information that wasn't available several years ago. I bring him up for a reason. What does Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have in common? They were great admirers of Saul Alinsky, who was a communist, but he was a community organizer. And yes, he wanted to bring down capitalism, but he wanted to use the rules against us that we have. In other words, use our system against us. So there is, if you will, another link. The last thing I want to see happen is 8 years of Hillary Clinton. If she gets elected, I'm afraid that this country is in serious trouble. In other words, the internal threat will only get bigger, better. Just got the signal, I got to wrap it up. I'll probably continue this in future shows next week. But I wanted you to get the link between radical Islam and the radical left in this country. And they are conspiring against you and me, both for our jobs and for our security. And that means your lives, folks. Now, on a positive note, America the Beautiful. Thank you. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.